I'd like to read to you this morning from the prophet. And it's a chapter on work. Every chapter in this beautiful little book is a pure jewel of life and of living. Then a plowman said, "Speak to us of work." And he answered, saying, "You work that you may keep pace with the earth and the soul of the earth. For to be idle is to become a stranger unto the seasons, and to step out of life's procession that marches in majesty and proud submission toward the infinite. When you work, you are a flute, through whose heart the whispering of the hours turn to music. Which of you would be a reed, dumb and silent, when all else sings together in unison? Always you have been told that work is a curse and labor a misfortune. But I say to you that when you work, you fulfill a part of earth's furthest dream, assigned to you when that dream was born. And in keeping yourself with labor, you are in truth loving life. And to love life through labor is to be intimate with life's inmost secret. But if you in your pain call birth an affliction, and the support of the flesh a curse written upon your brow, then I answer that naught but the sweat of your brow shall wash away that which is written. You have been told also that life is darkness, and in your weariness you echo what was said by the weary. And I say that life is indeed darkness, save when there is urge, and all urge is blind, save when there is knowledge, and all knowledge is vain, save when there is work. And all work is empty, save when there is love. And when you work with love, you bind yourself to yourself, and to one another, and to God. And what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even as if your beloved were to wear that cloth. It is to build a house with affection, even as if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow seeds with tenderness, and reap the harvest with joy, even as if your beloved were to eat the fruit. It is to charge all things you fashion with the breath of your own spirit, and to know that all the blessed dead are standing about you and watching. Often have I heard you say, as if speaking in sleep, he who works in marble and finds the shape of his own soul in the stone is nobler than he who plows the soil. And he who seizes the rainbow to lay it on a cloth in the likeness of man is more than he who makes the sandals for our feet. But I say, not in sleep, but in overwakefulness of noontide, that the wind speaks not more sweetly to the giant oaks than to the least blade of all, to the least of all the blades of grass. And he alone is great who turns the voice of the wind into a song made sweeter by his own loving. Work is love made visible, and if you cannot work with love, but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of those who work with joy. For if you bake bread with indifference, you bake a bitter bread that feeds but half man's hunger. And if you grudge the crushing of the grapes, your grudge distills a poison in the wine. And if you sing, though as angels, and love not the singing, you muffle man's ears to the voices of the day and the voices of the night." Our Bible chapter this morning is St. Matthew chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. "And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out, and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set high on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. It is an interesting thing as this is written, particularly this third verse. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, this blessed are the poor in spirit is separated, because if you are in the Spirit, you see, you are rich indeed. You may be poor to all of the earthly things of life, but you are the richest individual in the world. I need not go into each one of these verses and enlarge upon them, because they are self-explanatory. We worship God for many reasons. Many times it is because we are in deep struggle, deep turmoil, deep pain and suffering. We haven't thought it necessary, as a rule, to lift our eyes to the hills and to worship God, to pray to Him, until we have really come to some momentous event in our life where we need His help. Few there are indeed who just worship God without any incentive, any inspiration, any need, just because they love Him. And yet, that is the way we should worship the Lord. Each one of us should have our hearts so filled with the love of God that we want nothing but our union with Him. We should realize the truth of the Scriptures, that until we can seek Him and the kingdom of heaven first, that nothing else is going to be added unto us in the way that we wish it to be. Our lives are not going to be successful. They're not going to be fulfilled. We're never going to be at peace with ourselves. We're always going to be in want of something, whether it be money, whether it be loved ones, whether it be success, whether it be health. It doesn't make any difference what it is. We are never going to have all that we want. And that greatest of all boon, peace, until we ourselves make the effort. Nobody can do it for us. This is one thing I keep saying over and over again, that I can teach you the truth, I can guide you and direct you, but it is you who must do the work. And it says in there, and I think this is the greatest of all of the verses in this particular chapter, let your light so shine before men that they shall see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. This is the most tremendous thing. When you yourself can do everything that is within your power constantly to try to purify yourself, to keep your consciousness fully upon God, to serve Him, to do His work, then your light will begin to shine. It will be as though there was a dirty window, and that window was encrusted with dirt from years and years and years and years. You know, it is the truth that this house in which we live in is not kept as clean as it should be. We put much food in it that is not necessary, and is not necessarily the type of food we should be taking. And the thoughts that we dream up and dwell upon are certainly not always pure. And the actions that stem from those thoughts, those actions which stem from the desires which are generated within our being, certainly aren't pure. There are many people who are very good-hearted. There are many people whom a great many love and delight in being with. and that these people are filled with fear. They do not have the courage to face whatever or whoever is bothering them in their lives, to really get in there and face it and thrash it out and get it behind them. So they live a life of fear, of cringing, and many times of deceit, constant deceit. This is not right in God. Even though the heart is pure, the outer actions have an influence on the world, and particularly on your own life. You have the power to take up your life and to make it a thing of shining success, a thing of glory for God. You also have the power to do absolutely nothing about it, but just to get through each day the best way you can and feel sorry for yourself, to dislike the work you are doing, to never think about serving others in the true sense of the word, that you're serving God when you're serving that individual. All of these things go by the board. And until we can change our consciousness and our goals, our lives will never be successful. I have just finished reading, I think, the most tremendous book I've ever read in my life. I gave a copy of it to a couple of people this week, and I wish that all of you could have it. It's entitled The Greatest Salesman in the World by Og Mandino, I think his name is. And this book is really something, and it is given in story form. I can't hope to tell the story as this man has written it, but I would like to try in some way to tell you certain portions of it. It seemed that a man by the name of Hafitz had the reputation of being the greatest salesman in the world. He had amassed tremendous wealth. And yet this man had lived by principles which very few salespeople live by. He gave away half of all of the profits that he earned to help those in need, to feed the poor and the hungry, to clothe them, to do whatever was necessary to help them. And he gained a reputation for this great salesmanship in many ways. Many people criticized him because he had taken unto himself a young man by the name of Erasmus, and he had trained him. He had trained him. He was a faithful servant. So he had put him among the camels in the beginning. No, I think I have that name wrong. I'm not sure. But anyway, he took this young boy, whatever his name was, and he started to started him out as a trainer of camels, a caretaker of the camels. And this young boy had a tremendous ambition. I've got this story all wrong. It's an amazing thing. The man and the servant were sitting together. They were sitting together, and the man, Hafitz, was very, very old, and his faithful servant had served him very well. And they were talking about all of the things that had happened, and the master had called the servant to him so that he might discuss something new that he wanted to do. Having accumulated all of this wealth unto himself, he now wanted to dispense with it, because he knew that his time on earth had just about expired. And he had been given a very sacred trust. A very sacred trust. And he had kept the secret all of these years. And he wanted to discuss this secret with his servant Erasmus. And so they met and they were discussing this. And he told this man that he wanted him now to make arrangements to dispose of all of the wealth he had accumulated. And he asked him how much that he still had on hand. And he said that he had about 10 or 7 million talents, and that there were goods that would bring 3 million more. And he said, "All right, what I want you to do is this." He said, "I want you to make out papers that will give to each one of the keepers of my storehouses. all the property and all of the merchandise that they possess. And I want you to give each one of them 50,000 golden talents for their use, so that they might furnish their stores, their supplies, with whatever they wish. And the old servant Erasmus was startled about this. He said, I want you to give away everything. He said, I want to keep only enough to keep me going until such time as I leave this earthly place. So the servant said, why are you doing this, master? He said, because I have a very sacred mission entrusted unto me. I have kept it a secret all of these years. It is a secret of how I became the greatest salesman in the world. And today, I want to share that secret with you. So the two of them went up into the dome of the tower. Now, this room had been kept locked for many years, and great had been the conjecture by many as to what was kept in this dome. Some said that it was filled with diamonds, others with hoards of money. Others said that it had strange animals and rare birds. But when they opened the door finally and went into this dome, there was only one small chest in the corner. Erasmus was very surprised to find that this was true. He couldn't understand how all of these years that the secret and the tales that had been told amounted to just this. And so Hafiz went over and took out a key, and he opened the chest. And as Erasmus looked into the chest, he found only leather scrolls. There were 10 of them. And he thought to himself, how can this be? And he put his hand down, but he withdrew it quickly because it seemed as though they had life in them. And he said, master, tell me why this is so tremendously valuable. And he said, all right, my son, I will tell you the story of these scrolls. He said, many long years ago, when I was just a boy, he said, my father and mother died, and a very great man by the name of Pathros took me in and adopted me as his own son. But he didn't treat me as an honored son of the house. Rather, he made me a camel boy, taking care of the camels, because he said that in order to really live and appreciate life, one must learn to do all of the things necessary the hard way. If life is made too easy, we do not grow. And so he said, I was this camel boy. But he said, I had a great and burning ambition. I wanted to be something more than a camel boy. He said, this man, Pathros, was said to be the greatest salesman in the world. And I wanted to be the greatest salesman in the world, even as he had been. So one day I left my camels and I went to Pathros and I said to him, honored sir, I have a desire to be one of your salesmen. I see these salesmen come and go from the city of Bethlehem, from Damascus, from many, many places. And he said, while they are successful to a certain degree, still they are not successful as you are. I would like you to teach me the secrets of your success. And he said, my son, do you know what you are saying? Do you think that you are qualified to do this? Why is it that you have such ambitions? Is it gold that you seek? Yes, sire, he said, I seek gold. I seek success. He said, but when you leave this life, he said, you cannot take your gold with you. He said, of what good is gold? He said, oh, he said, gold is indispensable because, he said, you cannot think of the higher things of life. As long as your body is hungry, you do not have clothes on your back, you do not have the wherewithal to support your family. He said, what has caused you to have this great ambition all of a sudden? He said, is it just within yourself? Well, recently, sire, he said, I met a girl. Oh, he said, this is the answer. He said, you met a girl, you want to marry her, you want to be successful for her. He said, yes. He said, well, everyone must have some goal, some cause in order to get him started on the pathway to life. He said, all right, I will give you an opportunity. He said, it is a very tough life and a very lonely one. He said, it is not easy to be out on the road all by yourself, to pass the homes that are lighted in the evening and see those who love one another sitting around a table, having companionship one with the other, enjoying life together, while you're out there all by yourself trying to make a living. He said many times, those who become desolate, those who become so lonely that they can't stand it, go out and do things in order to try to fill their hunger, to do away with the loneliness. And he said when they do these things, it only drags them down deeper into the ditch, into the mire of loneliness and unfulfillment. So he said, nevertheless, I will start you out. I will give you a robe, and it is the most wonderful robe that can be found any place. He says it has a little gold star down at the hem of it, and right next to it, it has my symbol, which is a circle with a square on the inside of it. And he said, whenever you find this, he said, it is made by Toro, you will know that you have the best quality robe that money can buy. He said, I will give you this robe. And he said, how much will I charge for it, Master? He said, I will sell it to you for one denarius. And whatever you get over and above that, he said, you may have for yourself. So the young man was overjoyed to think that his foster father was giving him this opportunity. The next morning, with a few things, few possessions, and a little food, and the robe tucked away, he started out. His foster father had told him that the first place he should go was to Bethlehem. He said, this is the most difficult city in all the world, and all of the salesmen avoid it because it is so difficult to sell things there. He said, yet years ago, I sold hundreds and hundreds of robes there. And if I can do this, you also can do it. So the young man trudged on his way to Bethlehem. And he arrived there, and it was a very different type of life than anything that he had seen before. And he became filled with fears. And he thought to himself, I've always come with the caravans before, but now I am totally by myself. Have I done the right thing in giving up my life as a camel boy, or should I continue onward? But somehow he happened to remember this girl whom he loved, and that gave him the incentive and the courage to go on. He went to an inn, and he paid a week's rent in advance, which increased his stature in the eyes of the innholder. And then he started out to try to sell the rope. He used the best sales pitch he knew how. He tried everything he knew. He went into the marketplace. He went to the homes of people. He accosted people on the streets. And every time he tried to think up new ways of approach to them in order to sell this rope. But no one would buy them. Some of them cursed him. Some of them just kicked him away from the door. Others just shut the door in his face. Some said to come back later, but no one would buy. He was extremely discouraged, extremely discouraged. The next morning he was sitting at a table and he was looking out of the window, and all of a sudden he saw a great flock of sparrows, and he saw one little sparrow come to the window. The bars were very, very narrow, so narrow that the sparrow couldn't get through. But he was having his morning meal, and the sparrow, seeing the food there, persisted and persisted, and finally worked its way through the bars of the window. And so, because of its success and its efforts, he fed the sparrow all that he wanted. And he looked out, and there were all those other sparrows outside of the window, but not another one ventured in. And he thought to himself, I am so lonely, I'm so despondent, I'm so discouraged, and yet this little bird has taught me a tremendous lesson, a tremendous lesson. It has taught me the lesson that my foster father has taught me. Failure will never overtake me if my desire to succeed is strong enough. Failure will never overtake me if my desire to succeed is strong enough. That's a tremendous saying, and it's a tremendous truth. Because if you persist and never give up, you cannot fail, because this is the law of life. And so with renewed effort, he went out. His money was gone, finally. His food was gone. Nighttime came, and instead of going into the hills as he had first planned on doing, he decided that he would go into a cave. And so he left his things there, and he was wandering around. As he came back, he saw a dim light in the cave. And he thought this was very, very strange. And he became over fearful for fear the thieves might have entered in and have taken his robe. So he went in, and instead of seeing thieves, he saw a man and a woman and a little tiny newborn baby. He knew it was new because it was still all red and wrinkled as new babies are. But the man and woman were very cold. It was bitter cold because they had both taken off their outer clothes and had used them to cover the babe. And the only thing that was showing was his little face. And they shivered and drew closer to each other. And as he looked at the little babe, he saw that the corners of its mouth twitched, and it had a most enchanting smile. And he felt so sorry for these people who had given their cloaks in order to keep their little child warm, that his heart was deeply touched. And so, reluctant as he was, he removed the cloaks from the babe, and he put them back on the man and the woman. And he reached over, and he got this beautiful robe that he had come to Bethlehem to sell. And he wrapped the newborn babe in it. And as he left this cave, with the grateful thanks of the mother and the father, there was a tremendous shining star overhead. And strangely enough, as he started to walk, the star followed him. He returned to his home. He hadn't made a sail. He had given away his robe. And he was indeed fearful as to what his father was going to say to him. He didn't know how he was going to face it because he was an utter failure as a salesman. He didn't even notice this bright star following him. Petros had come to the edge of the village, and he was there. And he was looking at this shining star, just as this boy, whose name was Hafetz, stopped before him. The star stopped moving also and shone right over his head. Pedro said, "My son, you have come home. I take it that you were successful in selling the robe." "No, master," he said, "I was not." He said, "I'm fearful to tell you my story, but I will tell it to you." And he told the story of his failures, of everything that he had tried to do and that he had not succeeded. He told him about the little bird and how it had come in and given him courage to go on just through its own success, through its efforts. And then he told him about seeing this little babe and the man and the woman in the cave. He said, "Was there anything special that happened?" "No," he said, "I just saw this man and this woman and this little child in the cave." He said, "Did you see this tremendous shining star?" "Star? What star?" he said. "I didn't see a star." He said, "You must surely have seen the star." He said, "It has followed you here, but now that you are here, it has stopped and it's shining right over your head." And he said, "No, I did not see it." He said, "This has been a strange night, my son." He said, "I have been following that star in the heavens because it was the forerunner of a prophecy that has been with us for hundreds of years." He said, "The foretelling of a great one that was to come on earth was to be heralded through the coming of a star." And he said, "And you gave your robe to this little babe." He said, "Yes, I did." He said, "I think, my son, that you are the answer to my prayers. Long ago," he said, "I was bound to secrecy. Long ago, I was made to make a promise that someone would come to that someone who would come and succeed me as the greatest salesman in the world. Now," he said, "I would like you to do something. I would like you to again become a camel boy until I send for you. And then," he said, "I will explain it all to you." So the lad agreed, and he went back to taking care of the camels. And at the end of a certain period of time, the foster father called him to him. But when he saw him, he was absolutely dismayed. Because where the man had been strong before, filled with life and energy in spite of his great age, the day he was in bed and he was weak and his skin was wax-like in appearance. He looked as though he had not long to live, and he said to him, "Master, what on earth has happened to you?" He said, "My child, the fact that the star followed you, the fact that the events which you took part in came to pass," he said, "has brought forth the heralding of my sojourn, of the end of my sojourn on earth." He said, "Now I must tell you the secret. And so he told him the secret of the scrolls and how he became the greatest salesman in the world. He told him that failure is man's inability to reach his goals in life, whatever they may be. Is that not true? And he told him that there were 10 scrolls in all, and that the first scroll gave the instructions as to how to use the other 9. He was to read each scroll, one at a time, and he was to read it the first thing in the morning, silently to himself, after lunch, and at night before he went to bed. And he was to do this religiously for 30 days. He was to absorb consciously every word of advice that was in that scroll. And the scroll said to him that today he was going to start a new life. A new life. He was going to completely revise the old life. His life was going to be a thing of wonder, of beauty. But he was supposed to do 2 things. He was supposed to study this until it became a part of him. He was supposed to then give half of everything that he made to others in order that their life might be easier. These things he had to promise to do. At the end of 30 days, he was to take the second scroll, and he was to do the same thing with that until he had mastered it, until it became a part of his consciousness, of his very life itself. And then, gradually, each scroll was to be mastered in this way. And at the end of that time, he said, if you will do this, if you will master everything it says in the scrolls, you will be the greatest salesman of the world. And so then, he opened the first scroll. And the first scroll had to do with love. Love is the greatest power in the world. Love is the greatest sales instrument that anybody can use. No matter how unlovable anyone is, they still have lovable qualities within them if you can but find them. How could they not have when God Himself, who is the source of all love, is in the midst of all of this and in Himself? So he was to practice love. He said, he was to say, each day, I shall meet this day with love. I shall not see anything but love wherever I go. With each one that I look at, I shall look at him with the eyes of love. Instead of hating my enemies, I shall love them. Instead of disliking my work, I shall love to do it for his name's sake. Instead of anything that I can think of that is adverse and disagreeable to me, I shall give it love. I shall expand my heart and my consciousness until I become the epitome of love, until I spread that love and it becomes a magnet to draw all into myself. I shall not sell the man my goods per se. I shall sell him the love I have in my heart. And as he feels this love flowing from me, it will open his mind and his heart, and he will reach out for that which I want to sell him. And so he went to work, and for 30 days he read the first scroll, the second scroll, until he mastered it, and he practiced it every single waking moment, and he started to be successful. He wasn't always, but he started to be. And gradually he attained a feeling of confidence with regard to his sales ability. The second scroll he then opened at the end of the first 30 days. And that second one says that I shall persist until I succeed. He had the example of the little sparrow before him. To persist until you succeed means never to acknowledge failure, never to have a negative thought in your consciousness, to always think positively, to build your perfect dream, to plot the things that you want to do, your goal, to make your skeleton plan, and to let God fill in the details. And then, if you will do that, if you will persist until the end, you will succeed. Jesus brought this out so beautifully, so graphically, when he said, he who will endure until the end shall have a crown of eternal life. And this is true. This is really true. The next scroll was this: I am nature's greatest mirror. Did you ever stop to think that you are nature's greatest miracle, that you alone have power to stand upright on 2 feet that aren't very wide or very long, that you have the power within yourself to hold those feet on the ground, even though you have shoe leather underneath it? Did you ever stop to think of the tremendous power you have as an individual to mold not only your own life, but as a result of doing that in the right way, to change the lives of millions? Each one of us is a special miracle in God. There are no two people in this whole world who are exactly alike. No two people. Each one comes with his own special gift from God, his own special destiny to fulfill. And sorry indeed is the individual who approaches it with a lethargic viewpoint, who hangs on to the things of the flesh, the things of the senses, instead of reaching out for his rightful heritage as the Son of God. This is the greatest miracle of all. Of all of God's creation, we alone have the consciousness, the power of speech, the ability to move as we choose to move at our own direction and accomplish miracles, to build whatever comes into our minds in the thought process, to bring it into outer manifestation. We alone have that power, and therefore we are nature's greatest miracle. Man has the power to realize that in truth he is the Son of God, God himself in human form. And when he can come to that point where he can ask himself, who am I? And have the courage and the determination to pursue that question until he gets an answer, never giving up, he will find who and what he is. And he will find that he is the radiant Son of God, the very presence of Christ in human form. Then the next scroll had this injunction: I will live this day as if it is my last. You know, you can think about dying. You can even see yourself lying as dead, either on the ground, in a casket, or whatever. But yet you cannot accept the idea that you are dead, even though you have the power to visualize your body as being dead. Why? Because you are eternal life. This one who is viewing that body that lies on the ground or in the casket still lives, still has consciousness to know that it is, it exists. So wherein is death? But say that you fear death, and that the doctor had told you that this was your last day to live. How would you live? Would you stay in bed filled with fear? Would you commit suicide in advance because you didn't have the strength to wait the day out? Or would you spend that day doing everything you knew how to do as perfectly as you knew how to do it in preparation for your meeting with the Lord? Would you not give service? Would you not want to be with those you loved? Would you not want to express your love to them in every possible way, to prepare yourself for that great moment? It is a good thing to think sometimes, I wonder if this is the last day of my life, and what am I doing about it? Am I procrastinating? Am I failing to fulfill myself in the way that I should? Have I made the effort to become one and with God and to realize this glory that I have within myself? Or am I still a weak, sniveling, crawling creature, subject to all of the winds that blow around me? It is really good. The next one was, today I will be master of my emotions. All of us are very emotional creatures, some more than others. Some of us cry at the drop of a hat. Others go into deep fits of anger and frustration. They fly all over the place. They have no control over their anger, over their emotions. Others have not the ability to control where their heart goes. And many is the person has died from a broken heart. Many is the person has gone through life crippled with a broken heart. Is this worse than a broken leg? The only thing about a broken heart is that you can't see it. You can see a broken leg, but you can't see a broken heart. Yet there are many people who go around with this same broken heart within themselves. But if they had the ability to be master of their emotions, still they could love. Still they could give of all of themselves, because they would not be loving themselves, but rather the object of their adoration. To love someone else, expecting something in return, is not true love. It is self-love. Self-love alone. It is when you want to give everything you are and everything you have to the beloved, asking nothing in return, that you truly love. But when you can be in the midst of the greatest stress, the greatest strain, when you can have people reviling you, cursing you, saying all manner of evil against you, and yet you can remain calm within yourself, you can stand still and really take it, and yet not take it at all. You see, nobody can harm us. Nobody can hurt us in any way unless we give them permission to do so through our own acceptance of it. This is the truth. And gradually, as you continue to keep your feet on the spiritual path, gradually as you continue to keep your eyes fixed always upon your goal, which is the realization of your oneness with that supreme presence that is within you, which is your very life, you will learn to become master of your emotions. But you will not do it through an easy life, I can assure you. Every single one of us needs adversity in order to grow. If we do not have it, we will not grow. We will stagnate. And so these things which we cry out against are the things which we should be counting our blessings about, because they are the greatest opportunity given to us to find the power of overcoming within ourselves, to reach out for the highest and the best of that which we can be. The next one is, I will laugh at the world. Laughter is a very contagious thing. It is beautiful. It is wonderful. But the greatest thing is to be able to laugh at yourself. You know, when you can watch yourself and all of the antics that you go through sometimes, all of your miseries, your fears, your hopes, your pride in self-doing and all of this sort of thing, you can truly laugh. Because when you think, when you really get down to basics and think that without the power of God within you, without the intelligence which He constantly supplies to you, without the energy which keeps you moving and living and having your being, that you couldn't do a thing, it really is something to laugh at yourself. Because you of yourself can do nothing. It is your Father, every moment of your life, who doeth the works. It is He who puts the thoughts in the mind which He has given you to use. It is He who gives you the energy to move in the world. It is He who gives you inspiration, the power to imagine, to create, to be co-creator with Him in all that you do. It is He that gives you the power to rise above pleasure and pain. It is He who gives you the power to become gods, to realize who and what you really are. And you already are that, only you have not realized that. This is an amazing thing when you can think of it. But if instead of always going around with a long face, of recounting all of your ills, your trials, your tribulations, you would meet each day with a smile on your face, it would be a tremendous boon, and you would be well on your way to success. Because smiles beget smiles. Master used to say, be a smile millionaire. If you can smile at everyone you meet, if you can greet each one with that love we were speaking of in that first scroll, and you can really make it count, not a false thing, but a real thing, then, and then alone, will you find that the world will change and the world will smile back. It's a wonderful thing that is happening today in all of the stores, all the places of business. I don't know who started it, but it's great. Have a good day. Have a good weekend. I hope you will be happy over the weekend. I've had all of these things said to me. And always I say, thank you. I certainly wish you the same. Because it's a wonderful thing to put this thing into practice, how badly the world needs it. Today I will multiply my value 100-fold. How do we do that? We do that because we are given a body, a mind, a soul. We are given judgment, discrimination, logic, reason, and the power to visualize, to imagine, the power to move and to do. And in all of these things that are given to us, we can multiply from ourselves all of the things that we create within our own consciousness, within our own being. And as you start out to make a success of your life, to make your life something different than it has ever been before, and to remold yourself as a human being, you will find that you will multiply 100-fold. Look at the great men of history, above all, the great God men. And you will find that their lives are multiplying and will continue to multiply until the end of time. Krishna, Jesus, Buddha, Zoroaster, Confucius, all of the great ones, and those in other fields who have been good men and who have done great works. Not everybody can be a king nor a president, and in these days, who would want to be? But if you can be king over your own kingdom, if you can be president of your own domain, if you can be a good monarch, a good ruler, and see that all of the subjects within you are taken care of as they should be, that they're fed and clothed and taught in the way that they should be fed, clothed, and taught, you will find that you will multiply 100-fold. Do you think, can you understand the tremendous power that is in your hands and how very little use you are making of it? Why do we not wake up and really do something about ourselves and our lives when we have this tremendous power, this same power that brought this whole universe into being, right within us? Because we have a universe within ourselves. We are God in human form, with the power to create, to develop, to multiply, now and always and forever. We will never die because we are that word, that living word, that living consciousness, that living power within each and every form is that power of God made manifest. And you have that same power of manifestation within yourself to create and to bring forth whatever you wish your world to be. You have that power. What are you doing with it? What do any of us do with it? It is unbelievable how we waste our lives in just little tiny details of frustrations, of always reacting in the wrong way, of never relaxing and leveling out and realize that when somebody or somebody does something wrong or something happens that is not good, that is just a part of life, but that it's wonderful because that's how the individual grows. That is a circumstance that is placed before us in order that we may become greater people in God. The next one is, I will act now. It is all very well to read a good book, to hear an inspired sermon or lecture, to make a lot of good resolutions. But unless you put those things into action, you're not going to even take the first step. You're not going to go any place, and you will spend the rest of your lives wishing that you had gone. This one word, procrastination, is terrible. Always you're going to do it tomorrow, never today. And until you can learn to do what you should do now, this moment, your tomorrows are never going to change. You will live in poverty. You will live in unhappiness and unfulfillment. You will never be one whole person. So you must conquer this worst of all things, which is procrastination. To start now, today, in building new habits of thought, of speech, of action, until those new habits take over and replace the old ones of never doing anything, of always saying and doing and fulfilling the wrong thing, which brings nothing but misery into your life. And the last one, which is the greatest one of all, is that I will pray for guidance. Even the atheist, when something terrible happens to him, cries out for help. Automatically his eyes go out. He cries for help from some unknown source, even if he refuses to believe that there is a God. Everybody cries for help when he has that need. But when you come to the point where you will not cry for help, but rather for guidance, that you may endure whatever is coming to you and rise above it, you will really have grown to be a God person. Ask for guidance, pray for guidance every moment. Go into the silent temple, the sanctuary of your own soul. Close all of the openings of that temple and commune with that radiant presence who is your very self. Ask for guidance, for inspiration, for power, for strength to meet each day and to do as the Lord wills. And the greatest thing you can do is to say, Lord, let not my will be done, but thy will. If you can turn your will over to God totally, in total surrender, if you can accept all things which he gives you, knowing that they are for your highest good, you will have taken the first giant step to the road, on the road to becoming the greatest salesman in the world. What is the greatest product to sell? God himself. God himself. If you can be a salesman, a saleswoman, to inspire others, no matter what your line of work is, to seek God within themselves. If you can be such a light shining on a hilltop that all men will see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven, they will not only reach out for your product, but they will reach out for what you have. And as they reach out for what you have, and you let God speak through you, act through you, think through you for their benefit, for God in them, you will find that your own consciousness will grow. You will find that they will change. And you will find that at last we have a better world, a world of peace on earth, goodwill toward all men. What greater objective is there in life? It is a soul reason that every individual, every man, every soul is put on this earth. So let us put these things into practice and say, I'm not going to start it today or tomorrow, but today, this moment in time, I will change my life. I will put these principles into practice and I will keep at it. I will persist until I become the greatest salesman in the world. So this man told this boy the story. And just then his servant came to him. And he said, Master, there is a man who wishes to see you. And this man came in. He was dirty. He was soiled. He didn't look like much. And he was very apologetic. He said, I have nothing to sell. I am not begging. Please let me see your master. I come to him on a matter of great importance. I hear he's the greatest salesman in the world. And so the master bade the servant have him enter. And he came before him and stood there. And Hapa says to him, my son, he said, these old eyes can't look up anymore. Sit at my feet and then tell me of your journey. And so he told him that he had heard that he was the greatest salesman in the world. He said, I was a man, he said, who had lived a very bad life. He said, I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in a Messiah. And he said, I did many, many things. He said, I come and I bring to you a gift. It is a robe. And he said, it was worn by a man called Jesus of Nazareth, a man who did a tremendous good for the people, but whom they crucified. He said, I was preaching against him. He said, I was carrying out the orders of my superiors, and I was on a mission to kill some of these people who believed in the Christ. He said, when all of a sudden I was on the road to Damascus, And he said, a great light overtook me, and I was fell to the ground. And I heard a voice saying to me, Saul, why do you persecute me? Why do you persecute me? And he said, I looked up and I saw this tremendous form of light. And he said, rise now and go on your journey, and I shall come to you and tell you what to do in a few days. So he said, I rose from there and I became a changed man. And again he visited me and he told me that I was to go out and preach the word. So he said, I started out, because I'd been totally converted, to preach this religion which before I had persecuted. But he said, no matter where I went, I was not able to sell the people, because he said they had known who I was and what I was. He said, I came from a place of high birth, but nevertheless, this is how I have misused my life. And he said, they would not buy my goods. Finally, he appeared to me again, and he told me that I must seek out the greatest salesman in the world, and he would give me the secret. And he said, the old man's eyes lighted up, and he said, tell me more about this robe. And so he told him that this was the robe that Jesus had worn, and it was stained with blood. And he said, where did he get it? And so the man told him the story of the birth of the Christ. And when this Hephaeus realized that this very robe which he held in his hand, which was covered with the blood of the Christ who had been crucified, and that he was the one who had furnished that robe to keep that child warm, he knew at last that the one he had been seeking to succeed him, the one to whom he must pass on the secret of the scrolls, had arrived. And so the transfer was made. And the old man chose Saul, who became Paul, to go out and share the secret of the scrolls, because the injunction had been that the third one who was to have them could give all of these truths freely to the world. And indeed, Paul became the greatest salesman in the world, because he sold God through Christ. It's a beautiful story. If you can get it, do so. If you can, I can order it for you. But I would suggest that you not only read it, but that you keep it with you, that you do everything it says in there, and your lives will be so beautiful, so wonderful, so successful in God, that you won't believe that such a miracle could happen. But it can, because to God, all things are possible. I'll let us pray to him. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
May thy love shine forever.
May thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
And bring them to thee.
And bring them to thee.
Oh.